goals. A journey into a world that is just beyond our comprehension. The world of the paranormal.
To the 13 Skulls. In this week's episode, we take a look at a woman who decapitated her albino son for being a tormenting wizard. The La Santa Muerte death cult invades the U.S., sheep mutilations in Veracruz, Mexico, a strange noise phenomena, the real-life Jedi Academy, and the Vortex of Death. That and a lot more in this 56th episode of the 13 Skulls.
Now the rules to life, I know.
Welcome back, everybody. I really appreciate you coming out and taking a listen to the show. Let's go ahead and just get into it here in just a moment. I just wanted to say I hope you guys have all been doing good. It's been a rather odd week for stuff going on in the paranormal and the world of the strange and unusual. Before we get into all of that, if you want to sign up for the premium show and get the show every single week and get extended versions of that show, then visit premium.the13skulls.com. It's only $5 a month. You can get 4 episodes a month. That's 1 episode every week. That's only $1.25 an episode. If you go to iTunes and buy a song or buy something like that, or go somewhere else to some other music sharing website or something along those lines, you know, something that you have to go and pay for, you're not going to get very much for your money. I think this is a very good deal. It's only $5 a month. You get 4 extended episodes every month. That's 1 episode a week. That's close to 8 hours of material for only $5 a month. That's about $1.25 an episode, which is a pretty good deal. So let's go ahead and get right into it. The first thing that I wanted to take a look at today was courtesy of blogs.abcnews.com. A woman has claimed ownership of the sun. If you've ever heard of the International Star Registry, it's an operation out of Illinois that allows you to name a star in the sky for a loved one's birthday, Valentine's Day, etc., all of that. They'll sell you a certificate and a piece of jewelry to prove it. If you go over to the fine print, you'll find that you really don't have anything official for your $54. Angeles Duran, a 49-year-old woman from Salvaterra de Mino in Spain, has gone one step further. She's gone to her local notary public and claimed ownership of the sun. There was no snag. I backed my claim legally. I'm not stupid, and I know the law, she said. I did it, but anyone else could have done it. It simply occurred to me first. Ms. Duran told the El Mundo News she plans to charge all users, that would be us, a fee. Anyone who uses the sun, so if you go out into the sun, she'll be charging you. She'd give half the proceeds to the Spanish government, 20% to Spain's pension fund, 10% to research, and 10% to end world hunger. She would keep the remaining 10% for herself, which would be pretty crazy considering if you think about 10% of 6 billion is around somewhere in the area, if I'm doing my math right in my head, about 600 million. Actually, it's probably more than that. It's just a really odd story that she would take ownership of the sun. I don't think you could actually back that up and charge everyone on the planet to use the sun. I don't think it's possible. And if you did do that, I'm sure somebody would sue her for the sun going down every day or something along those lines. I think it's going to be just a stupid mess. But whoever the governments were, the people that allowed her to do this, it's rather funny that they would allow it. I don't see how you could actually take ownership of it because it's a star. There's no way you could ever fix it if it broke or something along those lines. You know, it's not like owning a house or something along those lines, but I wish I could talk to this woman because if she does have ownership of the sun, I want to see if maybe she can make the days just a little bit longer because I could use about 28 to 30 hours a day. You know, maybe we can sue her for not having enough hours in the day that the sun isn't in the sky for long enough and see what she could do then. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on to another article, which is courtesy of bbc.co.uk. A CT scan has been carried out on the mummified skull of a former Archbishop of Canterbury who was beheaded in 1381. Images from the scan carried out at the West Suffolk Hospital will be used to create a facial likeness of Simon Theobald. He was also known as Simon of Sudbury, who was also once Lord Chancellor of England. He was killed outside the Tower of London during the Peasants' Revolt. Axe marks can be seen on the back of his skull, which usually rest at St. Gregory's Church in Sudbury. Professor Carolyn Wilkinson from Dundee University is overseeing the project. She said, "I have dealt with ancient Egyptians and other preserved bodies, bog bodies, but so far this isn't unusual for me. The unusual thing was seeing the head in the hole of the wall in the church. I was expecting the bone to be a little more fragile, maybe a little bit crumbly, because this has been in the wall of a church for over 600 years. But actually, the bone is very sturdy. It doesn't look like there's been too much damage." Jenny Segar, curate at St. Gregory's, said, "Theobald was born into a prominent Sudbury family. He was brought up in the area, went to the University of Cambridge in Paris, and then he took various church jobs until he became Archbishop of Canterbury. The church hopes that the facial reconstruction that's being carried out will be complete by the end of the summer." Ms. Segar said, "It's got huge implications for the children of Sudbury who study Simon as part of their curriculum activities. And it's got huge implications for the church. After all, we get to find out what one of our most prominent members looked like for the first time in over 600 years. I found it to be really interesting. These facial reconstructions that they do from a skull, I just wonder how accurate they really are. Now, I know you could get the facial structure right, but could you actually get it to where it would match what the person really truly looked like? I don't know. I just found it to be really interesting that they're doing this, and I can't wait to see what the guy looked like. The next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of newvision.co.ug. Alleged witchcraft victims have abandoned their homes. Over 10 families in Buko Monsimbi have abandoned their homes, saying they have been afflicted by witchcraft. The LC1 chairperson, John Moyingo, said the spirits that caused the unrest allegedly belonged to Gorit Nemutebi. Nemutebi is the main suspect because after the first case was reported, she disappeared. When we asked her to join us for the cleansing rituals, she declined to come. He was addressing herbalist led by Masaka District Traditional Healers Association chairperson Salongo Kuyinga, who had gone to perform the cleansing rituals of the 10 families. Moyingo said the families abandoned their homes because they feared that they would be the next victims of the witchcraft. The woman being accused of witchcraft disappeared from the village after losing her husband and later her 3 children. But she has denied all knowledge of how it came about. She said one day that she saw 2 unfamiliar young girls and a boy entering her house, but when she followed them, they were not inside. From that day, members of her family started dying one after the other. Later, her neighbors were attacked. Those who survived death disappeared. Moyingo also claimed that the woman declined to join the residents to cleanse the village. She offered part of her land to be sold to get money to hire herbalist. She instructed me to sell her land, which I did, and I hired traditional healers to help us. These villagers are here because they have confidence that you'll relieve them of the burden that they are carrying and help those who have abandoned their homes to return. It's really interesting. There's not much more to this article there. There really wasn't a whole lot to begin with as far as details. But apparently this woman saw some children go into her house who weren't there. Were they ghosts? Were they entities of some kind? Were they demons? Were they witches themselves? Were they some kind of a tulpa that a witch sent to this woman's house to kill her family? Was it just a strange coincidence? Were the kids able to just leave the house before she came inside to see if they were there? Were her family members just sick? Did they have some kind of a disease? There's no details there as to what's and hows and whos and all that stuff as far as, you know, how these people died. There apparently were no autopsies done on the people who died to see why they died, but I just thought it was an interesting account of witchcraft and supposedly witches killing people. All right, well, the next article is courtesy of ntnews.com.au, and it's raining fish in Australia. The freak phenomenon of fish raining from the sky continued with another load found bucketing down in a territory community. The small bait could be found en masse at the airport strip in Lajamanu, about 550 kilometers south of Katherine. Territory politician Rob Knight was flabbergasted to find the fish on the red soil on the edge of the Tanami Desert, hundreds of kilometers from Lake Argyle and Lake Elliot. These fish had not long been on the ground, he said. The NT News reported on February 28th last year how Lajamanu was covered not once but twice by fish falling from the sky. Local aged care center co-coordinator Christian Balmer said then she had to pinch herself when she found hundreds of them. These fish were alive when they hit the ground, she said. A tornado may be responsible for the phenomenon, but Mr. Knight speculated increased UFO activity in the top end, as often reported in NT News, was behind the wacky appearance. It's very interesting. I don't really know what to say about this other than I've seen it rain tadpoles and frogs. So what it is that's doing this? Was it some kind of a waterspout? Was it some kind of strong tornado that took these up? I don't really know, but I always found it really strange when you hear about animals and meat and flesh and fish falling from the sky. All right, well, let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of thestar.com.my. Court officials are being spooked by ghostly activity. Paranormal exterminators came to chase away demonic spirits said to have been haunting the building which houses the city's courts. And this is Johar Bahru. In one instance, a court employee became hysterical when she reportedly saw several apparitions in her office. Senior court officials, not taking any chances, sought the help of a boma to cleanse the 30-story building of dozens of spirits and ghosts. There are at least 8 civil courts housed in the building at Jalan Bukit Meldrum. The health department also places some of its units in there. A court policeman claimed the ghostly incidents occurred shortly after the courts moved into the building. A court employee went into hysteria after she brushed into a ghost. Several others have seen ghosts and doors opening or closing on their own. A court interpreter said many staff members were shaken by such incidents and sought help of a policeman who acted as a medium to get rid of the spirits. There has since been no sightings. Former Johar Bahru chairman K. Balaraja admitted he had heard some of the strange happenings in the courtroom. I received at least 3 complaints from lawyers about strange occurrences and sightings in the building. He added that judges had also expressed their uneasiness about the matter. It's really interesting. I'm not really exactly sure where this is. I'm thinking maybe it's in Malaysia because of the .com.my part on the web address. But I just always found it interesting when you can incorporate some kind of judicial or governmental facility in with the paranormal and have them say that they've seen ghosts. I don't know how it works in other countries, but here in the States, if you want to work for the government or work in the judicial system, you have to be able to pass a drug test. Does that mean all of those government workers and judicial workers are free from drugs? No. But what it does mean is that they're a little bit more credible as far as what they're seeing. Now, does that mean they're telling the truth all the time? No. But at the same time, for me, I just wonder if in this other country, do they have the same kind of standards as far as what their employees can recreationally use and what they can be on? Now, does this mean that the people who are there who are seeing these ghosts are crazy or on some kind of a medication or taking drugs? No, but there's a possibility. I found it interesting that these people were court officials and policemen and people who work in the judicial system were seeing demonic spirits and had to get an exterminator to chase them away. So let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of news.discovery.com. Robotic clouds could cool the 2020 World Cup stadium. In December 2022, Qatar will host the World Cup. In the article from The Guardian, Stuart James writes, members of the Qatar bid committee were immediately forced to go on the defensive as they faced questions about terrorism, the treatment of women, and the blistering heat in what will be the smallest country to stage the World Cup finals. At least one of these talking points was being addressed, the heat. Temperatures in the summer can reach up to 120 degrees Fahrenheit. But Saad Abdul Ghani, head of the Mechanical and Industrial Engineering Department at Qatar University, thinks he may have a solution. He and his team propose large, robotic, cloud-like structures made from a lightweight carbon structure kept aloft by 4 solar-powered engines. The artificial cloud could be flown over the Lusail iconic stadium by remote control to provide shade to the 86,000 spectators. If you want, there is a video here that you can go and watch the artificial cloud in action. It's only about a minute long, so you can go and easily take a look at it. The stadium itself, if they do build it like this, is pretty awesome. I really like the design of it. It has this weird, flowy, oblong, weird kind of wavy look to it. The cloud itself, they don't really show much of it, which I really kind of wish they did. But the stadium itself is pretty wild. You need to go take a look at it just so you can get an idea of what they're talking about. But yeah, 120 degrees Fahrenheit is pretty daggone hot. I live here in Texas in the United States. For those of you who are out of the United States, we're in the middle of the United States, but on the southern part of the United States. So the southern middle. And it gets up to about 100 to 110 here in the summer, Fahrenheit that is. And I mean, that's friggin' hot. But you get up to 120 Fahrenheit, that's boiling. Well, it's not boiling enough to boil water. It is enough to make you know it. You'll know the heat's out there when you get up to 120 degrees. It's just rather odd. It really is that they're going to build this hovering cloud that is almost the size of the stadium itself. It's pretty crazy, but I wanted to take a listen to something real quick that I know everybody and their brother is going to be talking about this. They're going to be putting it in just about every show that's out there, but I wanted to put it into this one. I'm going to jump on that normal bandwagon of what everybody else is reporting on and go for this Sammy Hagar interview. It was recorded at the Rock the Bayou in Houston. He talks about aliens. I just thought it was an interesting little interview. Let's take a listen, see what he had to say.
See, now it's a long story. Now we need time. Okay, folks, it's going to be an hour program. They didn't come into my room. They were parked up on a hill up behind my house about 12 miles away, and they were connecting into my brain like a computer
download.
That's what
I was going to ask you.
The closest, it was a wireless download in 1967 or something.
Is it possible that you were like a human iPod from outer space? You were playing songs that the aliens gave you?
Oh, I hadn't written a song ever in my life yet. I wasn't even a musician. Right. I played guitar a little bit, but I didn't have a band. You know, I was thinking about starting a band. I was just trying to find a way to make a living without working, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I didn't have a job yet.
It's also possible that if they uploaded information from your brain...
No, they downloaded. I mean, they downloaded some of their information into me.
But they took some of your information.
I didn't have any. At that time in my life, I was worthless. I could maybe teach them how to, like, you know, smoke a joint or something.
Hey, Bishop, there's three kinds of aliens.
You know about all this?
Yes.
Okay.
So
yeah.
You've been great, man.
Yeah, there are. There's probably more than that. Right. But the ones that we're messed with mostly, there's robots, there's real creatures, the gray ones.
What would, which if we were to go from Earth and travel into outer space, what category would we be put in?
Oh, we're like animals.
a different category?
We're like insects. No, we're nice guys. See, the aliens, most of them aren't really that nice guys. The gray ones, they're not nice guys. They just don't have any feelings for us. They treat us like we do.
Like we treat ants?
Ants, and we treat rats in a lab. They'll cut you up a little bit. Yeah, hey, exactly. Look at this. What's this thing hanging off this guy? Whoop!
Exactly.
Now, I love how they basically make it sound as if, oh, you're a human iPod from outer space. People always try to joke about this stuff, but yet, you know, there's a lot of credible evidence out there to say that there's people being abducted by aliens and being communicated with. Now, I have heard that sometimes people think that maybe it's not aliens so much as it is the government. But with Sammy Hagar just now saying that they aren't really emotional, they're kind of mean, they're not happy. I found that to be really interesting because I've heard that kind of statement before with quite a few other people. I don't know. I just thought it was really interesting that of all people, Sammy Hagar is going in this direction, that he's talking about this, that he's actually open enough to talk about this, and that he doesn't mind, you know, someone joking around with him about it, but at the same time, he's being open about it. And for me, that's quite a big step. I like hearing people who are in the spotlight talk about this kind of stuff. Let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of themorningstar.co.uk. A woman has decapitated her albino son for being a tormenting wizard. Now, there's not much to this article here, but it says being an albino in Africa is a pretty tough job. We've reported about this earlier on in some earlier episodes about how they're taking body parts from albino people and selling them to witch doctors. On top of the near blindness and increased risk of skin cancer, they also have to face the terrible superstitious prejudices of other Africans. This week, a Nigerian woman has been arrested and faces possible death after she beheaded her own son because he was albino. The unnamed woman from the Nigerian state of Benue was arrested last week and appeared before magistrates in the state capital. During the hearing, the suspect told officials that she had murdered her son because he was albino and she suspected him of being a wizard and that he had tormented her since he was born. The woman's been placed in custody until her next court hearing on April 19th. Very strange, man. I mean, it's amazing to me what people believe. Now, I'm not saying that it's bad to believe what you believe because it's different than what I believe. You believe whatever you want. To have a belief that your son is a wizard and that he needs to be murdered, much less decapitated, because he is an albino. The belief of that is a bit strange to me because they're murdering people and taking their body parts off of them and selling them. Now, this woman didn't sell them, but she did kill him because she thought he was a wizard and that he's been tormenting her since birth. Was it just because he was an albino that she did this? Or was there some truth to it? Now, there's a picture there, I believe, of the boy. You know, you can tell he's albino. But at the same time, I mean, I don't really understand where the whole wizard part came from. I wish there was more to this article here, but there's not. You can go to a forum there, which is the Morningstar forum, and discuss this with other people. Really strange. I've never heard of someone saying that their child was a wizard and had been tormenting them since birth. All right, guys, well, we're going to take a little bit of a break here. When we get back, we're going to look at a Tanzanian man who was arrested for having his wife's head, breasts, and genitals in a bag. NASA is preparing a mission to launch astronauts onto asteroids. Two cars, one wreck, zero passengers. That and more in just a minute, so you guys stay put. We'll be back.
My name is X246ZY7 from the planet Dotopia. And when I'm in your rather primitive solar system, I go to ParanormalPodcast.com and set my podcast aggregator to Paranormal Podcast with Jim Harold. Finally, a show about me.
Well, sort of. At Paranormal Podcast, we interview authors and experts from around the world about everything from UFOs and ghosts to the existence of life after death. Are crop circles real? Is there scientific explanations for the Bermuda Triangle phenomena? Learn this and so much more on the Paranormal Podcast. Now, we take our subject matter seriously, but we have fun too. Even skeptics are welcome. So please subscribe. It's free. You can find us at Podcast Alley, the iTunes Music Store, or at ParanormalPodcast.com. Take a listen. Open your mind.
Hi, I'm Charlie Silvestri.
And I'm Jason Mundock. WCHE will present a new one-hour music showcase.
In the first half, Up Close and Acoustic with Charlie Silvestri will feature music performance and interview radio.
In the second half, Around the Woodstove with Jason Mundock will feature conversations with artists about their music and the inspiration behind it.
We'll be including local, regional, and national touring acts.
Look for us on Saturdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on 1520 AM WCHE and WCHE1520.com.
Brought to you by Taylor's Music of Westchester.
Are you troubled by irregularity? Then listen to Access Denied, Humans Defective. 9 out of 10 doctors say you yourself every time. Access Denied, Humans Defective. Download it from iTunes or directly from the show website at accessdeniedradio.com.
The next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of themorningstar.co.uk again. A Tanzanian man has been arrested with his wife's head, breasts, and genitals in a bag. The man was arrested trying to sell the parts of his wife to witch doctors. The suspect, who hasn't been named, confessed to the murders and dismemberment of his wife's body during a police investigation. He told officers that he intended to sell the body parts to witch doctors because he heard that human organs were in great demand. The suspect had a plastic bag and claimed to be carrying pork, police commander Dewani Athumani told Times Live. Police guards checked the contents and discovered a human head, breasts, and genitals, and other body parts. The suspect is currently undergoing a psychiatric evaluation. Very strange that that's all there is to this article there, but it's very strange that the man would not only first murder his wife, but cut off her head, cut off her breasts, and cut off her genitals and other body parts, which continued on, but they didn't say what they were, and put them in a bag and tried to get on a plane and fly. I don't really understand why you would do something like that, first of all. I don't really understand why it is that you would try and sell them just because you thought that there was a great demand for them. What justification do you have to say that it's okay to make money off of murdering someone? I don't really get it, much less your wife. I'm sure there's plenty of men out there that would do something like this. Plenty of women out there that would do it as well. There's a lot of crazy people out there. Maybe it's just me and my belief system and not really understanding it that causes me to simply just not understand it. I don't know. But let's go ahead and move on to the next thing that I wanted to take a look at, which is courtesy of first-news.blogspot.com. NASA is now estimating there are at least 2 billion alien Earths in our galaxy alone. Roughly 1 out of every 37 to 1 out of every 70 sun-like stars in the sky might harbor an alien Earth, according to a new study. These findings hint that billions of Earth-like planets might exist in the Milky Way alone. These new calculations are based in data from the Kepler Space Telescope, which in February wowed the globe by revealing that more than 1,200 possible alien worlds exist including 68 potentially Earth-sized planets. The spacecraft does so by looking for the dimming of a star that occurs when a world transits or moves in front of it. The scientists at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, focused on roughly Earth-sized planets within the habitable zones of their stars. That is, orbits where the liquid water can exist on the surface of those worlds, where it's the Goldilocks zone, where it's not too cold and it's not too hot. After the researchers analyzed the 4 months of data in this initial batch of readings from Kepler, they determined that 1.4 to 2.7% of all sun-like stars are expected to have Earth-like planets. Ones that are between 0.8 and 2 times Earth's diameter and within the habitable zones of their stars. This means there are a lot of Earth analogs out there. 2 billion in the Milky Way galaxy, said researcher Joseph Catanzarite, an astronomer at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. He said, with that large a number, there's a good chance life and maybe even intelligent life might exist on some of those planets, and that's just our galaxy alone. There are over 50 billion other galaxies. After 3 to 4 years of Kepler data are investigated, the scientists predict a total of 12 Earth-like worlds will be found. 4 of these have already been seen in the 4 months of data released so far. Kepler mission scientists said that they have estimated that altogether there could be 50 billion planets in the Milky Way, though not all would be Earth-sized worlds within the habitable zones of their local stars. Very interesting. I love the fact that they're finding stuff like this. I cannot wait for them to find a planet that looks like Earth. Whether or not it has life on it, first of all, I really want them to find life, but right now, I would be happy with them to find a world covered in water just like the Earth is. If they did that, then I would be ecstatic. It's a very, very cool thing, and I can't wait to see where this goes. On the same string of that, NASA is preparing astronauts for a mission to an asteroid. Astronauts are lining up to be candidates for an extreme trip of a lifetime. In a press conference this morning, which would have been March 23rd, NASA released the details of its plans to land astronauts on an asteroid by 2025. And while planetary defense is the most exciting of several reasons why NASA could be undertaking the mission, the agency says it isn't planning a Bruce Willis kamikaze mission. That kind of drama and intrigue is reserved for Hollywood, said Dr. Paul Abell, NASA's lead scientist for planetary small bodies. The Armageddon film with Bruce Willis was a very fun movie, but not exactly the most scientifically accurate, said Dr. Abell. This is going to be an exciting endeavor, but not quite that dramatic. It's going to happen a little bit more slowly. The mission is designed to garner new information about the potential to harvest resources from asteroids as well as the origin of life as we know it. This exploration incorporates both the science, exploration, resource utilization, and planetary defense all in one go. We can do things that will further humanity's forays into space, going to Mars, and expanding the human presence in the solar system. NASA won't be able to land a spacecraft on the asteroid directly, however, as most asteroids have a very weak gravitational field. That makes this thing a little bit tricky because asteroids travel at speeds ranging from 54,000 to 90,000 kilometers per hour. The spacecraft is going to have to travel at the exact same speed as the asteroid while the astronauts deploy to and from it to collect samples and conduct experiments. Though they've had plenty of volunteers, NASA has yet to pick a team of astronauts and do not plan to do so for at least another 5 years. But if you're going to apply for the job, know this. You have to be an experienced spacewalker. So pretty much they're going to have a very limited pool of people to pick from. They're only going to pick people who have actually been in space to do this. The physical activity, they are saying, is so strenuous that NASA is considering recruiting a new generation of younger astronauts for the job. NASA also has not yet chosen an asteroid on which to land, but they have narrowed it down to a group of 1,200 potentially hazardous asteroids that present a potential risk to Earth and its inhabitants, which is very interesting to me that they're going to pick a whole bunch of young people. I mean, by the time you do this, it's only 2011, 2025 is 14 years from now. If you pick some younger people, by the time they get to the point of being out there, it's already going to be older people on there. But I guess they're going to have, the experience to go out there and do it. I just found it really interesting. It makes me wonder what resources they're going to, quote unquote, mine from these asteroids, what they're going to get from it. I mean, yeah, they're going to get information, but will they try to bring those resources here and make it more of a commodity, kind of like oil is now, or gold, or, you know, some kind of a precious thing that they're going to get and it's going to be in such high demand that you can charge anything? If this goes the way that they want it to and they can actually find some very valuable stuff on there, I think that the commercial public will then try to do the same thing themselves so they can make a lot of money off of it. Anyway, I thought it was interesting. All right, guys and gals, it's that time of the show for another edition of Anomalous.
And we found out that the it makes people happy, it makes them intoxicated.
Welcome to Anomalous.
That's a lie.
Greetings, Anomalous, and welcome back. On this episode, we're going to be talking about the Skeleton Lake of Rupkund, India. Information on this episode can be found at http://atlasobscuria.com. There is no www in front of that. And this site has a lot of really cool and flipped out places in the world. So if you're looking for something to kill some time and you want to find some other weird stuff to go look at, by all means, check this site out. It's excellent. In 1942, a British forest guard in Rupkund, India, made an alarming discovery. Some 16,000 feet above sea level, at the bottom of a small valley, was a frozen lake absolutely full of skeletons. That summer, the ice melting revealed even more skeletal remains floating in the water and laying haphazardly around the lake's edge. Something horrible had happened here. The immediate assumption, it being wartime, was that these were the remains of Japanese soldiers who had died of exposure while sneaking through India. The British government, terrified of a Japanese land invasion, sent a team of investigators to determine if this was true. However, upon examination, they realized these bones were not Japanese soldiers. They weren't fresh enough. It was evident that the bones were quite old indeed. Flesh, hair, and bones themselves had been preserved by the dry, cold air, but no one could properly determine exactly when they were from. More than that, they had no idea what had killed over 200 people in this small valley. Many theories were put forth, including epidemic, landslide, and ritual suicide. For decades, no one was able to shed light on the mystery of the Skeleton Lake. However, a 2004 expedition to the site seems to have finally revealed the mystery of what caused those people's deaths. The answer is stranger than anyone had guessed. As it turns out, all the bodies date to around 850 AD. DNA evidence indicates that there were two distinct groups of people, one a family or a tribe of closely related individuals, and a second smaller, shorter group of locals, likely hired as porters and guides. Rings, spears, leather shoes, and bamboo staves were found, leading experts to believe that the group was comprised of pilgrims heading through the valley with the help of locals. All of the bodies had died in a similar way, from blows to the head. However, the short, deep cracks in the skulls appeared to be the result not of weapons, but rather of something rounded. The bodies also only had wounds on their heads and shoulders, as if the blows had come directly from above. But what had killed them all, porter and pilgrim alike? Among Himalayan women, there is an ancient and traditional folk song. The lyrics describe a goddess so enraged at outsiders who defiled her mountain sanctuary that she rained death upon them by flinging hailstones hard as iron. After much research and consideration, the 2004 expedition came to the same conclusion. Over 200 people died from a sudden and severe hailstorm. Trapped in the valley with nowhere to hide or seek shelter, the hard-as-iron, cricket-ball-sized hailstones came by the thousands, resulting in the traveler's sudden and bizarre death. The remains lay hidden in a lake for 1,200 years until their discovery. This is Rogan, and you've been listening to Anomalous. Peace out from the D.
I had absolutely no idea about that. That was the first time I've ever heard about the Skeleton Lake. Very strange that they died from hail. Now, I understand that you can die from hail. There was a bad hailstorm here in Texas a long while back. It was during Mayfest, I believe, where a bunch of people got injured from, you know, baseball-sized hailstones. They come from high enough and they build up enough momentum, I can see how they could kill you easily. But, you know, I didn't know that. So thanks again, Rogan. I really do appreciate you sending that in, man. That's just some great stuff. You really are bringing up some really cool things that I had never heard about before. Let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of Reuters.com. Reuters, Reuters, however you want to say it. I don't know. I don't really care too much at this point because I get it wrong every time I say it. Venezuela's President Hugo Chavez is claiming that capitalism may be to blame for the lack of life on Mars. I've always said, heard, that it would not be strange that there had been civilizations on Mars, but maybe capitalism arrived there, imperialism arrived and finished off the planet, said Chavez in a speech to mark World Water Day. Chavez, who also holds capitalism responsible for many of the world's problems, warned that the water supplies on Earth were drying up. He said, "Careful, here on planet Earth, where hundreds of years ago or less, there were great forests, now there are deserts. Where there were rivers, there are deserts." He added that the West's attack on Libya were about water and oil reserves. Earlier this month, the U.S. National Research Council recommended that NASA's top priority should be a robot to help determine whether Mars ever supported life and offer insight on its geological and climatic history. It would also be the first step in an effort to get samples from Mars back to Earth. A NASA team recently tested a spacesuit in a setting with extreme conditions akin to those on Mars. So, I guess, really, if the United States goes there, then maybe we might be bringing some form of capitalism back to Mars, if that's what's killed off all the people that were there. I don't know. I thought it was an interesting claim, to say the least. Let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of GOFBW.com. The La Santa Muerte death cult makes inroads across the U.S. border. They call themselves La Santa Muerte, the Saint of Death, and her followers have multiplied rapidly over the last decade as violence has gripped Mexico and spilled across the border to the United States, from Mexico City to border towns such as Laredo, and lately in large American cities such as Houston, Dallas, Los Angeles, and Chicago. Her cloaked skeletal icon, usually depicting gripping the Grim Reaper's scythe, is often seen hanging from the windows, entryways, and sometimes on the tattoos of her disciples. Her appeal lies in basic human desires, especially appealing to the poor and to drug runners who entreat her for protection and vengeance. Healing, money, protection, or they want power, explained Orfa Ortega, who along with her husband William serves as a Southern Baptist missionary in Mexico City. Santa Muerte is a growing concern for Christian pastors in border towns such as Laredo, where a meeting last month hosted by Southern Baptist missionaries drew Spanish-speaking pastors, church leaders, and at least one concerned police officer whose experience at a local jail prompted him to attend. The death cult figures prominently in the surging violence by Mexican drug traffickers known as narcos. In interior Mexico and along the U.S.-Mexican border, William Ortega told those at the meeting. Of the 28 million people in Mexico City, about 2 million are estimated to be followers of Saint Death, with large numbers of them in Tepito. Increasingly, the death cult has moved north, making inroads into border towns and American cities where Mexican immigrants find work. Ortega said adherents are largely two groups, drug dealers and the poor, with the drug dealers seeking protection from authorities and vengeance on their enemies, and the poor seeking healing, protection from the violence around them, and prosperity. The death saint, the followers claim, offers all of the above. In the Texas border town and across the Rio Grande in Nuevo Laredo is the largest number of Saint Death followers along the Rio Grande. Often, Christians are seen as enemies of the cult for their winning converts and refusing to syncretize Orthodox Christianity with the death cult. Although the Mexican government officially removed Santa Muerte from its list of recognized religions in 2005, and the Roman Catholic Church has deemed it a pagan cult, many of its adherents are said to mix their Catholicism with Santa Muerte practices. With its authority in mostly oral tradition and its roots in ancient Aztec and Mayan death gods, the cult easily spreads its message through folklore. Worship practices include the placing of rum, flowers, or candy at the feet of a Santa Muerte altar, begging her favor in exchange for her favorite gifts. Very strange. I haven't seen that happen anywhere around here. The practices kind of resemble Santeria from what I've seen, but I mean, no, I'm not really sure. I'm not a religion expert in any way, shape, or form. I just thought it was interesting because it does include the area in which I live of Dallas. to see that this is coming around. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's anything new. It might be a little bit newer here in the United States, but there are a lot of Hispanic people coming into the United States, and they're going to bring their belief systems with them. So you're going to see a rise of that in the United States. Is it bad? Is it wrong? No. I don't see anything bad about it. As long as they're not killing anybody, you can practice all of the different religions that you want. That's what the United States is all about. But anyway, I just thought it was interesting. So let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of thisisdevon.co.uk. Two cars were destroyed after bursting into flames in the Wellswood area. No one was injured in the incident, which happened in Kent's Road just after 8:30 p.m. Strange part is, no one was in the car. Police and firefighters say the circumstances of the collision were not clear. Two fire crews attended the incident where two horse reels were used to extinguish the blaze. Cutting gear was used to gain access to the vehicles to put out the flames. A police spokeswoman confirmed that details of how the fire started remain uncertain. Recovery teams were called to take away the written-off cars. The odd part is that no one was there. There are some pictures there that you can go and take a look at. They're saying that these cars collided, but they're right next to a building, so it almost looks like they were parked and caught on fire, which is maybe why you didn't happen to see anybody inside of the vehicles. I'd like to know whether or not the owners of the car were there and what they know about it, because I'm sure you can track them back to somebody. The cars were pretty much a total loss. It's just a mystery because no one was in the car. Nobody knows how it happened. And it does appear as if they collided into each other because one of the cars is crinkled up in the front end, like it rear-ended one of the cars. So the one that rear-ended the car is kind of buckled back. So it does appear as if they were in a wreck. Anyway, you guys, we're going to go ahead and take one last little break here. When we do, we're going to come back and take a look at what is supposedly being called the solved mystery of the Chupacabra. Dead sheep have been drained of their blood in Veracruz, Mexico, and the real-life Jedi Academy. So you guys stay put. We'll be back in just a minute. Alright everybody, the next thing I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of lifeslittlemysteries.com. Supposedly the Chupacabra mystery has been solved. Benjamin Radford, author of several books on monsters and paranormal phenomena, manager editing of the journal The Skeptical Inquirer, and live science columnist, has released what he says to be definitive proof that the Chupacabra is not real. It's not even a hoax, he said, but rather a leftover memory of a science fiction film. Stories of El Chupacabra first surfaced in March of 1995 in Puerto Rico, That August, a newspaper printed an eyewitness description of a bipedal creature, 4 to 5 feet tall, with spikes down its back, long, thin arms and legs, and an alien-like oblong head with red or black eyes. That depiction became associated with the chupacabra, and it reports of similar creatures began popping up throughout the Caribbean, Latin America, Mexico, and Florida. That frenzy had died down slightly by the year 2000, but picked up again in 2004 when something began attacking livestock in Texas. A farmer shot one of the offenders, and later more alleged chupacabra carcasses started turning up. They looked nothing like the Puerto Rico original, and DNA tests later revealed that they were actually coyotes with a severe case of mange. On top of the sudden change in appearance, a hairless, snarly-looking four-legged creature is the popular depiction in Texas. These coyotes didn't even act like the chupacabra. When you did a necropsy on the chickens and goats that they attacked, they all had normal blood vessels. They were not, in fact, vampirized. Radford dug through every chupacabra mention and traced the physical description of the monster to a single event in the week of August of 1995. When a sketch from an eyewitness named Madeline Tolentino ran in a Puerto Rican newspaper, locals immediately tagged the alien-looking animal as the chupacabra, or the goat sucker. The creature, Radford noticed, shared a strong resemblance to the alien-human hybrid in the 1995 science thriller Species. When he spoke to Tolentino, he asked her if the thing she saw could have been inspired by the film. Indeed, she said she had seen the movie in the weeks prior to making her description. Soon after, reports of nearly identical creatures began appearing throughout Latin America. But these can now be dismissed, Radford says, because they are all based on Tolentino's Hollywood-inspired monster. Even if you're not convinced by DNA evidence or Radford's research, simple logic could help you realize that the chupacabra just doesn't exist. For one thing, it would take a couple of hundred to a few thousand of the creatures to keep the species alive. If each of those animals is 5 foot tall and weighs around 100 pounds, it would be pretty difficult for there to be no confirmed sightings or fossils. Well, not maybe, but not necessarily. That's just what the article is saying there. Even if the beast did manage to hide, they'd still need a lot of food, and if they are actually vampires, then you'd expect to find a lot more blood-drained carcasses. If true believers had one complaint against Radford's work, he expects them to say that it's implausible that Tolentino saw something that doesn't exist. Radford, who has a degree in psychology, chalks that up to confabulation, a common scenario in which people simply confuse the fictional and real worlds. Which, I mean, I can see that. I can maybe see that. But if someone, I mean, is it a psychological condition that people are saying that they're seeing the chupacabra? Because the picture of what they show here up at the top does appear to be a coyote with mange. It does appear to be the shape of a coyote, which really doesn't surprise me a whole lot. But there have been a lot of sightings of creatures that don't look like this, that are being called the chupacabra. Maybe people are just calling them chupacabras because they don't know what else to call it. I don't really know. I just found it to be really interesting. There's more to that article there that I want you guys to go and take a look at and let me know what you think. The next thing that I want to take a look at is courtesy of uk.news.yahoo.com. Government officials in Siberia are planning to set up a special research institute dedicated to the study of yetis following a number of recent mysterious sightings of the folkloric creature. Hominology experts, who are lined up to lead the studies at Kemerovo University, are eager to prove their existence after people in remote parts of the region claim to have caught a glimpse of the elusive being. According to 15 witness statements by Siberian locals in the Kemerovo region, 7-foot-tall, hairy, man-like creatures have been spotted wandering the Mount Sharia wilderness, with one man even claiming to have saved a yeti from drowning in a river while hunting. Villager Afanasy Kiskarov reportedly witnessed the yeti actively firsthand. He said their bodies were covered in a red and black fur and they could climb trees. The creature was screaming in fear after falling into a swollen mountain river. Despite the alleged sightings, no photographic evidence as yet confirms the existence of the abominable snowmen. However, hair specimens, large footprints, and huge branch shelters in forest have fueled scientific belief to traces of the yetis. Officials in the Kemerovo administration in western Siberia have said that organizing an institute or a scientific center would be a logical continuation of a research into the yeti. Dr. Igor Burtsev, director of the International Center for Hominology, told Russian newspaper Itar Press after a Getty expedition last year, "I saw markers that creatures used to mark the controlled territory. In the woods, I have found several artifacts to confirm my theory. I plan to find the Bigfoot shelter and even try to contact the creature." The administration of Kemerovo, the regional government, will announce its final decision on whether they will implement the research institute after it hosts an international conference on Yetis later this year. Interesting. I can't wait to see what they do with this, and I really, really hope that they find some good evidence. I really do. I hope that they find some good evidence because there's a video that we were talking about in the last episode that they're going to show sometime. It's like a documentary that they're going to prove that the Yeti is there with some of the best evidence that's been out there yet. I can't wait to see what they got. I can't wait to see what happens with that. This next article is rather odd. I don't know whether it's Photoshopped or not. It's courtesy of AOLnews.com. A baby boy born with one eye in the center of its forehead and no nose was born in India last week and only survived one day, according to this article. Doctors were shocked when they delivered the infant by cesarean section from the 34-year-old mother, Avina Chavan. Dr. Ashok Anand, a professor of gynecology at the hospital, told reporters the child must have possibly suffered from cyclopia. A sonogram during Chavan's 32nd week of pregnancy revealed the baby was hydrocephalic, meaning water was accumulating on the brain. According to the doctor's report, medical staff wanted to perform an intrauterine shunting procedure but could not because of the advanced stage of her term. Surprisingly, though, this form of cyclopia occurs in roughly 1 in 250 embryos and is a rare form of holoprosencephaly, which affects how the front of the brain is formed during fetal development. With cyclopia, the eyes and nose don't form properly. Such fetuses are often lost early in the pregnancy. Therefore, it's rarely seen. The cause is often the result of a genetic mutation, though alcoholic and diabetic mothers are at a greater risk of carrying a cycloptic child. A preserved cycloptic fetus was donated to the Mutter Museum of the College of Physicians of Philadelphia in the 1960s, though its exact age is unknown and is on display in the permanent teratology exhibit. Above its one eye is a non-functioning nose in the form of a proboscis. Also on display in the Mutter Museum is a cycloptic fetal pig, just one example demonstrating how the disorder affects animals as well. It's very crazy. There is a picture here supposedly of the child. The baby was born again with only one eye and no nose and died within an hour of being born. I want you to go take a look at it. If you have a weak stomach or you don't like seeing stuff like this, I suggest you don't look at it. For the rest of you, go take a look at the cycloptic baby and let me know what you think. Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at are some sheep that have been drained of their blood and found in Veracruz. The Notiver newspaper reported on the incidents that took place at a ranch in the community of Las Compras, 2 kilometers distance from the municipal seat, according to Oscar Lionel Rojas, first police commissioner. The sheep were kept in a pen within the ranch owned by Justino Andres Breton and died when blood was sucked out of their bodies. Breton reported that he made the discovery on Tuesday morning. He found the 17 lifeless sheep scattered throughout the ranch as he was about to feed them. "We heard nothing in the early morning hours. There was no noise or anything like that. The animals presented bite marks in various parts of their bodies, mainly on the neck. Some of them had tears in their skin," he explained. His neighbors say it was the chupacabras. Because the attack on the sheep shares the same characteristics that were in evidence during the animal slayings years ago throughout the municipality and the region. Alarmed by the bizarre occurrence, local residents declared themselves in a state of alert, as they did not know the type of animal or beast that they were dealing with, and have therefore organized themselves into brigades to look after their animals. What is odd is that there are no traces suggesting that the animals went as far as where the sheep were kept. Residents have made their fear of the alleged chupacabra's presence well known and have taken measurements to prevent further attacks. For the moment, the first commander stated that monitoring operations had been stepped up in the region to find the animal that killed 17 sheep in an unusual manner in a single morning. This is the third report concerning mysterious deaths in Mexico in 2011. The first was in Chiapas and the second in Chihuahua. This is a very interesting thing. You know, 17 sheep in one morning and that they were supposedly drained of their blood does remind me of the chupacabra. Why would the chupacabra do that to 17 sheep at once? Unless it was really hungry or maybe there was a pack of them. Was it the chupacabra? I don't know. Was it just a group of coyotes going and killing these animals? Possibly. They didn't say whether or not there was any blood laying around, whether there was blood bled all, you know, all over the place, or if it was, you know, a dry ground around the sheep as if there was no blood that had been let out of the animals, like it had been either sucked out, like they said, or had been drained out and taken away. I don't know. I found it to be really interesting. I don't really know what to make of it. Take a look at the article. Let me know what you think. If you have any ideas on the chupacabras and whether or not you think it's fake or real, call in, email me, let me know. I'd love to hear what your opinions are. Now, this next thing that I want to take a look at is courtesy of news.google.com. And it's a kind of an odd thing. It's kind of hard to make your way through. But apparently, scientists say a belief in paranormal is harmful. Now, this is from an article from August 10th of 1977. Believing in some occults of reason could harm or kill you, according to a group of scientists and science writers. The Committee for the Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal said back then that belief in such things as astrology, powers of levitation, the Bermuda Triangle as a mysterious graveyard of ships and airplanes, and belief in UFOs may break down our ethical judgment and may also break down our resistance to new and unforeseen forms of tyranny. The group defined paranormal as being a belief in unproven or mystic phenomena. The committee told a news conference that it objected to books, newspaper accounts, magazines, TV, and radio presentations, which it said are pouring a steady torrent of paranormal claims into the marketplace. It called for cooperation with the scientific community to provide more responsible, balanced treatment of claims of the paranormal. Several committee members cited evidence that people have lost their lives or spent large sums of money out of a belief in the paranormal. There's a little bit more there to it. I just thought it was really odd. It was a rather strange thing. I don't really know what to make of the newspaper in 1977, but I found it to be really interesting that believing in the paranormal could be harmful. Now, yeah, true, to some degree it could be. But not believing in it doesn't make it not still there. Not believing in it doesn't make it not true anymore and make it not there. You know, so I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting article. I'll post a link up to it. You guys can go and finish reading it for yourself. All right, well, the next thing that I want to take a look at is courtesy of OddityCentral.com. A Chilean Taekwondo instructor has opened a real-life Jedi Academy. Following a dream of combining his passion for martial arts with his love for Star Wars, a Chilean Taekwondo instructor has opened up the Jedi School in South America. William Berruetta has been a fan of Star Wars for a very long time, which in 2005 it inspired him to start a training program for young sci-fi enthusiasts based on Jedi powers. It took a while for the 46-year-old to fulfill his dream, but he says the Jedi Temple opened last Thursday, and it will be accepting around 20 would-be Jedi warriors aged between 6 and 12. The idea is to make these children into Padawans, who will work with the young apprentices for a period of 3 months, teaching them yoga, self-defense, and meditation. In this period, they will learn relaxation techniques so they can concentrate and improve flexibility and mobility. That way, they will understand their bodies a little bit better. Students of the Quel Pui Jedi School will be dressed as Jedi fighters and practice with shatter-resistant lightsabers designed by Berruetta himself. During exhibitions, they will be using special sabers imported from the U.S. The Jedi Temple is apparently the second Jedi school in the world, but it's definitely not the last. Berruetta himself hopes the idea is to develop stability as a school and eventually thinking of larger projects like opening an academy in Santiago. Very interesting. There's some pictures there that you can go and take a look at of this guy and his students and what he's training them. And these kids just standing around. There's one kid there with a mohawk holding a lightsaber up against a mural of some starships, some Star Wars planes, you know, some Star Wars ships. It's really cool. It's interesting. I like this. It's kind of nerdy, but I just thought it was really interesting. I mean, if you're going to teach these kids a little bit more about meditation and concentration and stuff like that, that's good. They need to learn that kind of thing. I just thought it was funny. I want you guys to go and take a look at the pictures, at least, of the real-life Jedi Academy. Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of news.discovery.com. And apparently, once upon a time, the universe was really weird. It was in 2D. Today, looking out across a seemingly boundless cosmos filled with an unimaginable variety of exotic objects, it's easy to forget that the universe we currently admire is the product of a violent event that occurred some 13.75 billion years ago. The leading theory for the universal birth is the Big Bang. But Jonas Moreika from Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles, California, and Dejan Stojcevic from Sunny at Buffalo in Buffalo, New York, the answer may be a little bit more complicated than just the Big Bang. In fact, it may be so weird that we can't even imagine what it would have been like. According to an interview with PhysOrg.com, Moreika and Stojcevic have calculated that the early universe didn't only possess a hot, energetic, primordial state of matter, it also had a primordial state of dimensions. If they're correct, the three dimensions of space and one dimension of time that make the four-dimensional space-time we live in today isn't how it's always been. The universe may have existed in a lower-dimensional state in the past. The thinking goes like this. Shortly after the Big Bang, the universe possessed only one dimension of space and one dimension of time. It was basically a straight line. As the universe began to cool, it expanded. This one dimension of space became wrapped up in such a way to create two dimensions of space and one of time, a plane like a sheet of flat paper. The transition from one to two dimensions of space was calculated by the researchers to occur when the universe cooled to an energy level of 100 TeV, or tera electron volts, a measurement of energy commonly used in particle physics. A period of time after that, the universe continued to expand and cool until it reached an energy of 1 TeV. At this point, the universe got promoted to a higher dimension, three dimensions of space and one dimension of time, like we live in today. Moreika and Stojcevic think the universe will eventually be promoted again to a five-dimensional state at some point in the future. There are a huge number of cosmological conundrums that seem to fit with our current knowledge of the universe, so the dimensional evolution of our universe might be able to help. Now, there's a video here from Carl Sagan, and he tries to go on to explain the lower dimensional universe, what it would have been like. I just thought it was really interesting that possibly the universe was at one point in time simply just two-dimensional.
Available now on podiobooks.com.
In a dying world, only memory can save the living. J.P. Moore brings you Toothless, a zombie tale like no other. France, 1180 A.D. In life, he was Martin, a failed Templar knight, a father, a husband. In death, he is Toothless, a gifted warrior, a leader among the risen dead, serving an ancient, marauding evil. But life is not yet done with him. Toothless, an exciting new audiobook by J.P. Moore. Visit jpmooreonline.com to start your journey.
Available now on podiobooks.com.
Are you seeing this?
I must be getting interference. It almost looks like...
We may eat fruit from the trees in the garden.
Oh my God!
But God did say,
look at it!
Eat fruit from the tree that is in the middle of the garden.
Hold position until I can confirm.
You will not truly die.
We may eat fruit. I'm going in closer.
Wait a minute, damn it! What are you doing?
I can't see it well enough. If I could just get this...
Are you reading me? Stop it! That's an order!
Almost got it.
Eden, a podcast novella by Phil Rossi, author of Crescent and Notes from the Vault, available at patiobooks.com and crescentstation.net.
You will not surely know the serpent said to the woman, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil.
Eden, available at patiobooks.com and crescentstation.net.
Throughout the Planetary Union fleet, there are rumors about a secret ship named the PUV James Keeling, a ship no one has seen or can even describe. They say the crew on this ship has an 80% mortality rate, but not all deaths are from combat. That's why when people talk of the ship in hushed whispers, they don't call it the Keeling. They call it the Crypt, because it's filled with the dead. If you've been convicted of cowardice in battle, theft, assault, rape, even murder, sometimes you get a choice: execution or serve a 2-year stint on the Keeling. The smart ones, they choose execution. They say that in space, no one can hear you scream, but inside a ship, they can hear you just fine. The Crypt is a free audio novel by New York Times bestselling author Scott Sigler, creator of Infected, Contagious, and Ancestor. Download it at patiobooks.com.
Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of Fizzorg.com. Scientists plan to drill all the way down to the Earth's mantle. In what can only be described as a mammoth undertaking, scientists led by British co-chiefs Dr. Damon Teagle of the National Oceanography Center in Southampton and Dr. Benoit Edelfonce of Montpellier University in France have announced jointly in an article in the journal Nature that they have intended to drill a hole through the Earth's crust and into the mantle, a feat never before accomplished, much less seriously attempted. The Earth's mantle is part of the planet that lies between the crust and the iron ball at the center of its core, and to reach it would require drilling down from a position in the ocean because the crust is much thinner there. Even still, it would mean drilling through 5 miles of solid rock, and if that doesn't sound hard enough, temperatures increase the further down you go, and could reach as high as 570 degrees Fahrenheit, high enough to render useless most modern drill bits. Last but not least is the problem of atmospheric pressure, which increases the deeper you go to somewhere in the neighborhood of 4 million pounds per square foot near the mantle. The last one may not seem like much of a problem, but with the exploratory drilling, it becomes a problem rather quickly when you remember that it's not just a hole they plan to dig, but a hole that can be used to extract samples from very far below. To retrieve a sample, the drillers would not only need to rely on drills without a riser. The drills use double pipes for venting gas, which would mean pumping seawater down into the hole through the pipe with sufficient pressure to force whatever is being dug back up to the surface so that it can be examined. This would not be the first time that a sample of the mantle would be recovered, however, as volcanoes and such have been forcing undercrust material to the surface for eons. It would be the first time that a sample was found, though, that hasn't been tainted by the processes that have brought it to us, and that the scientists say is worth whatever the cost might add up to over time as the project carries on through years of laborious drilling. The pair plan to begin searching for a suitable site somewhere in the Pacific this spring, but they're saying don't expect the technology nor the funding to allow them to start perhaps until 2018. All that pressure, there's 4 million pounds of pressure there. Will they be able to stop anything from coming up from that if it's released from all that pressure? You know, they drill through the crust to the mantle, Will there be some kind of volcanic eruption at all? Probably not, but either way, I just can't wait for them to drill through. I really want to see what they find, see what kind of information they can get about the center of the Earth. It's really a fascinating thing simply because they say they know what's in the center of the Earth, but no one's ever been there to know exactly what's there. Science will tell you what's there, but no one's seen it firsthand. So to get a glimpse of the mantle from the Earth, the Earth's mantle, firsthand is just going to be truly fascinating. It really will. Well, all you guys and gals in the free show, this is the last article for the free show. I wanted to take a look at one from dailymail.co.uk. 100 bombs are washed ashore by the supermoon. The lunar phenomenon blamed as Second World War devices are detonated on Hampshire Beach. Just so you guys know, this past March 19th, I believe it was, this past Saturday, they had, a week from today, I believe, they had the supermoon that came about where the moon was about 30 or 40,000 miles closer to the Earth than it normally is. Well, for decades, these bombs had laid undisturbed underneath the water. Now, after 70 years, almost 100 of these Second World War bombs finally fulfilled their explosive destiny thanks to the power of the supermoon. A Navy bomb disposal team detonated them after abnormal tides thought to be caused by the unusual proximity of the moon washed them ashore on Southampton Beach. The experts, who warned that more of the still potentially deadly mortar bombs may yet to be uncovered, were initially called in after the low tide revealed six near Calshot Activities Center, which runs canoeing and sailing lessons for adults and children. The water had receded so far that it uncovered the 70-year-old mortar shells, which were pulled ashore as the tide came in. After imposing a 600-yard exclusion zone and detonating them, the Navy team was shocked to see another 87 appear over the next 24 hours. So they're thinking that these things just didn't blow up and that they got pictures of them here. You can go and take a look at them. They're really wild. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting that the supermoon caused a bunch of World War II bombs to wash ashore. Now, since it is the end of the show for you free guys, let's go ahead and get into the formalities, get them buried in the dirt and out of the way. If you want to support the show as much as you can and you're enjoying the free show and you want more of the 13 Skulls, go sign up at premium.the13skulls.com. Again, it's only $5 a month. You'll get 4 episodes a month, 2 extended versions of the regular free show, and 2 extended shows every week that the free show's not coming out. That's only $5 a month for upwards of 8 hours of content. That's only $1.25 an episode, and they're almost 2 hours long. If you have an experience or feedback to share, email me at the13skulls@gmail.com or info@the13skulls.com. Or if you'd rather call me, there are 2 phone numbers. One is 206-338-2205, and the other is 817-986-0019. If you like the music in the show, it's courtesy of the IOTA PromoNet at www.iotaalliance.com. Or some of the music might be provided by Mevio's Music Alley at music.mevio.com. The sound effects that have been, are being, and will be used in the show are courtesy of the Free Sound Project at www.freesound.com. If you have a promo you want to share with me, please do email me and let me know. If you want a button or a magnet, email me with your name and address so I can ship it to you and I'll get one out to you ASAP. I will again post links up to everything you hear about in the show notes, so go check them out at the13skulls.com for all you free people. For all you people who are paying for the premium episodes, you can go to premium.the13skulls.com and check them out there. For all you guys out there who are listening to the free show, I hope you're doing good. You guys have a great day, night, week, weekend, whatever it is that you're listening to this, and I'll talk to you guys on another day. For all you premium subscribers out there, we've got a lot of stuff to look at. We're going to look at a 200,000-year-old metropolis that's been found in Africa. Stephen King is going to write for The Walking Dead. Weather radar shows a UFO that's bigger than Belgium. And the Coven UH-1H UFO incident from 1973. So you guys stay put. We'll be back in just a minute. For all you free guys, take care.